All right, today what I want to do is I want to talk about children of light. And there's several concepts here that I want to try to communicate in two different venues. First of all, for us as individuals, it is so important that you and I live radically fundamental, non-conforming lives to the culture around us. You know, when I didn't quite grow up in the 60s, I'm not quite that old, but in that younger generation of the 60s, it was like trust no one over 30, you know, and there was just an anti-authority, anti-culture, rebellious attitude. I'm saying what Paul has been teaching us again and again and again, but this is where this little bit of rebellion in our nature could work an advantage towards us. We are not to be just like the world. We are not to be just like everybody who's outside these walls. Not that everyone outside these walls is. You know what I'm trying to say here? Just as an illustrative purpose. We are to be living different lives. And as we see in here, there's just a mentality, there's an attitude, the cultural pull is just tremendously strong. Someone showed me here the other day, that in 2016, Chevy is bringing the Chevelle back. Woo! Wouldn't that be nice? Materialism, greed, jealousy, envy. My little red Toyota back there don't mean nothing now. Give me that Chevelle. Could you imagine if they had that 440 engine in there again? Four-speed, four-barrel convertible? Oh, man, who needs to go to heaven? Just put the top down, crank the tunes up, and go for a ride. But you see just what happened? My love, my focus, my desires, all now is going towards the tangible stuff. And I'm no longer satisfied with a red Toyota. I want a Chevelle to a convertible. Ooh, wouldn't that be just fun? Setting all that aside, you can see as I'm playing a little bit of fun at myself, it's there. It's pulling at us all the time. And we have to be living lives that are different. In our homes, those of you that have children in your homes, you must continue to maintain a home that is different than the rest. There needs to be the house rules that will be obeyed regardless. We don't do that anymore, or we don't do that at all. And some of the stuff, and I'm not just talking about, you know, no porn. Well, obviously, that's kind of a given. No smoking, that's a given. But what about some of the other stuff, like hollering and screaming and swearing? I know that happens from the school bus, in school. Unfortunately, some of the teachers do that, the hollering. Maybe not so much the swearing. But when you come home, that doesn't happen. We don't do that here because we live as children of light. So as we work through this, you know, there's kind of a double-prong attack that I'm not going to be going any further. But there's that individual aspect. But those of us who do have children at home or other people living with us, our home life, I'll just use my address, 2 Sycamore Road is fundamentally different than 8 Sycamore Road or 7 Sycamore Road. Our house is different. I mean, it's the same country clubber. They all look the same. But inside there, it's different. So as we work through this material, just kind of be thinking about, in my home, is my home a home of light? And then is my life a life of light? One more thought, and then we'll get started. How many of you here got saved, like, in your teen years or later? How many of you got saved teen years or later? Maybe half. Those of you who got saved in your teen years or later, I don't want you to be dredging up those memories, because some of the things I did earlier in my life, as Paul says, I'm kind of ashamed of. But we need to be thinking, when there was that new birth, when there was that transformation, and as we read there a little bit in Ephesians 2, when he brought us out of death and brought us into life, is there any of that baggage that's still with us? Are we bringing any of those old ways still with us? Those of you who got saved earlier on, praise God for that. That's really exciting in many different ways. But as you're looking in the lives of your peers, whether they're in school or at work or wherever, Are you embracing and pulling some of that baggage into your life? Again, it's just so important. We have to be living lives that are different. And there's so many ways. Let me just give you one more. In our postmodern world, 30, 40 years ago, there was some standard of truth. I pray for Don Airey on a regular basis as a police officer back there, because even when I was growing up as a high schooler doing our young and dumb stuff back in the fields after football games and stuff, when the police came, there was a element of authority that we understood. And when they said cease and desist, or we're going to start writing tickets, and by the way, leave that stuff here, you can't take that, and on it goes. We respected that. But nowadays, there is, as we see in our culture today, there is no respect for any authority at all. So when we come to people and say, thus saith the Lord, they go, who? And what is that to me? So it's so important then in our own life, the only one of the few ways that we have left to really witness to this world of darkness, in a world that does not accept authority, there is no absolute truth, is by our lives. We want people, as Peter says, to come to us and ask us for the hope that lies within us. Why is your life different? Beverly, why are you here in church just a couple weeks after your husband died? Why are not you medicating yourself? But you know what I'm saying? We need to be living fundamentally different lives. And Beverly, again, unfortunately, has given us, well, unfortunate for her, but it's been a blessing to us to see someone who lose her spouse for 50, how many years? 56 years, and to how to go through that biblically. That was a shining, brilliant light. A very godly woman, and we can learn much from her example. But that is what's going to give us the opportunity to witness to other people. Living fundamentally different lives in your cube farm. We need to be living fundamentally different lives in our cube farms so that they will come to us and say, my marriage is falling apart. My children are a mess. My life is chaos. And you seem to be calm, cool, and collective in your cube farm. Why is that? Let me show you the God who has transformed my life. Let me show you the God who has given me peace and joy. And on it goes. And it's so important that we do that. Today, my question again for you would be to consider, what of your former life is still with you now with your life in Christ? Here's another question. What of the unsaved are you partnering with? And I'll explain that in a minute. And then lastly, what are the activities of the unsaved that you are presently, again, involved in? As we work through Ephesians chapter 5, verse 7, he says, therefore do not be partakers with them, for you were once darkness, but now you are the light in the Lord. So walk as children of light. We are not to participate, verse 7, therefore, do not be partakers with them. We are not to be engaging in partnership with the unsaved. This instruction is nothing new. In the Old Testament, how many times have you heard, be ye holy, for I am holy? As you go through, if no other book, the book of Leviticus, again and again and again, he says, this is the way you worship me. Don't you dare worship me like any other people in the land. You are to worship me different. You're to have different dietary laws. You're going to have a different civil law. You're going to have a different ceremonial law. You guys are going to be different. You're not supposed to even have a king like everybody else. You are going to be a human kingless person. Because I, God, I'm going to be your king. But everything was supposed to be different, and we know that lasted for a little while. But what he's telling us here in verses 7 through 10 is there's several things that we need to be putting off. And let me just again quickly remind them of you. They're all found in chapters 4 and 5. First of all, he says in chapters 4 and 5, The premarital and the extramarital sex that was commonplace in Ephesus should not even be so named among you. The lying, the stealing, the alcohol, Ephesians 5:18 and on, is not supposed to be involved in our life. The covetousness, the uncleanness, emotions out of control, Ephesians 4:31, 32. You cannot have your emotions out of control and just say, that's the way I am. He says you're to put all that off, which means you can control your emotions. We're to bring our thoughts captive. We're to think on things that are true and just and pure. He also says there as children of light, he says then that we are to give ourselves to what's good and right, verses 8 and 9. He says, walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is all goodness and righteousness and truth, finding out what is acceptable to God. Hey, have you ever thought about it this way? Have you ever got up in the morning and said, gee, I wonder what's going to be acceptable to God today? Have you ever grabbed your TV remote and thought, I wonder which of these many hundreds of programs are acceptable to God? When you click on Yahoo or Google or whatever, how many of these websites here now are going to be acceptable to God? As we peruse the magazine rack or as we go to the romance novels or wherever we are, what's that acceptable to God? Does it even register in our mindset? And honestly, unless you get into the habit, the answer is probably no. So somehow you've got to get in a mindset of just asking yourself on a regular basis, is this, whatever that is, acceptable to God? And he tells us what we should be giving our attention to, and that would be humility and gentleness and patience in chapter 4, the couple of verses there. Putting up with each other in love. Having greater knowledge of God, as Paul wrote about earlier in the chapter. Serving God by serving in the local church. We're to discern what is to be pleasing from the Lord. In your home, as you view your home setting, what is going on in that home, and is it pleasing to the Lord? And if you're a point of authority, meaning mom or dad or paying the bills, you do have some control to say, this is not pleasing to the Lord. And in my house, since we are a house of light, that can't happen. We can't do that anymore. But let's move on a little bit. Here's what children of light do. It's not just negative. You can't do, you can't do, you can't do. Although that is so wise. I'll tell you, one of the things that is nice about being older, again, the body is not one of them, but one of the nice things about being older is you can see life played out. And again, I've not really kept in touch with my high school friends. We just let all them go by. But when we went to Christian college, we've even been able to see some of our college buddies, how their lives have played out now because they have children and they have grandchildren. And some of them have not played out well. And then I don't necessarily judge them, but I try to think through why. Why? You know, we all went to the same college. We all got the same degrees. We all got married about the same time. Why? And I think as I look at some of their lives, not all of them, but some of them, they were not able to make a very clean break with the darkness. They got saved and they had some of their baggage or habits or likes or whatever, and they kind of brought that into the Christian life with them. And we're going to see here as I get a little bit further in there, we're not even supposed to be thinking about this stuff. And I think that it just continued to grow in their minds and grow in their minds, and they now are kind of shipwrecked for the cause of Jesus Christ. But one of the things that we're supposed to do here in a positive way, so it's not just don't, although there's so much wisdom in that, because as I said, I can see it play out in lives. But we're supposed to be positive too. And that's the second point here in chapter 5, verses 11 through 14. See, again, what we got going on here, let me try to say it this way, is a battle for the heart. The battle for the heart. Other than the sin of sexuality, which Paul says there in Corinthians is a sin against your own body, so don't go anywhere near that. But the rest of it is just basically a mind struggle. And it's a battle for our heart. It's a battle for allegiance. We were children of darkness, as Jesus says there in John, you are of your father, the devil, and the lust of the father you will do. And then we have children of light, and God's our Father. And oftentimes, especially with teenagers, we want to try to get right in the middle, or even sometimes we as adults with the work politics, we want to try to get in the middle and straddle the fence of darkness and light. But see, that's not the real problem. The problem is the divided heart. We have a double-minded man who's unstable in all your ways. It goes back to even Joshua. Choose this day whom you're going to serve. You can't serve both, or as Jesus said it there in Matthew, you can't serve God and money. You got to make up your mind. And what Paul is trying to say to the Ephesians church here is, live as children of light. Have no fellowship, verse 11, with the unfruitful works of darkness. That idea of fellowship, the first, and I didn't hit it too much, but in verses 7, 6, 7, and 8, has the idea of participation in them. For me, I'm not going to the bar with my drinking buddies to try to witness to them. Why? Because I'm not going to participate in their activities. As we get down to verse 11, it says no fellowship. There's more of a kindred spirit there, which means now I'm not going to be embracing their attitudes. I'm not going to be embracing their worldviews. I'm not going to be embracing their definitions of what it means to have fun. I'm basically, if I'm going to partnership or have kindred spirit with these unbelievers, I'm going to then embrace their idolatrous system, their idolatrous worldview, which means, again, you can live as children of light or children of darkness. You can't have it both ways. You can serve mammon or you can serve God, but you have to make the choice. And of course, the unsaved are not serving God. So I kind of buddy up with that, and I participate mentally and physically with that. Rather, we're supposed to expose the work of darkness. Let me just tell you a story here of what this means, and this is kind of a fun story. Ben Franklin, he wanted to put lights and to light the streets at night as a protection against crime and convenience for the travelers. And he tried, even as eloquent as he was, he could not influence them by words. So what Ben Franklin did was he got his lamp and he got his little wick and he cleaned it each night and he put this lamp out on a bracket sticking out from his house a ways to illuminate his stoop and the steps. Well, as people went by it, they saw it and they started putting lights out, because they appreciated it and they liked the safety of it. And before long, eventually the city recognized the well-needed lighted streets. And that's what Paul is trying to say here, where we are to expose them. The basic idea is this. We have to be careful that we are not influenced or controlled by the works of darkness. Yes, we need to expose it, but we're not necessarily pointing our fingers and saying, you're a bunch of dirty, rotten sinners. We expose it with light, saying, this is a different way to live. You don't have to go home and fight all night long. You don't have to constantly be craving more, more, more. You could be content with your Toyota and not a new 2016 Chevy Chevelle SS, by the way, too. They're going to put that out. You can be content with that. Then he goes on here to say in verse 12, don't even talk about the deeds of darkness. Protect your thoughts. We have seen the deeds there in verse 11, because again, that exposing them, exposing their deeds, we've seen it. Now we don't go home and rehearse it. We don't go back and be rethinking it again. We need to protect our thoughts. There's no need to rehearse the sin with yourself or someone else. Because is it not true that Satan dulls our conscience by repeated exposure to sin? And we know this in many different ways. I do have a few calluses on my hand around here and here and by my thumb from swinging the axe or the sledgehammer. Now, when I started this months ago, man, my hand was tender and I was getting blisters all the time. I probably, if I wanted to, and if we had time, we wanted to be graphic, I could probably take a pin and go down a certain amount and run it right through my hand and not feel it because of the calluses. But these calluses did not happen overnight. It was just by slow, repeated exposure to that wooden or fiberglass handle. And it's the same thing with our lives. It's by that continued exposure to sin, our conscience becomes callous or hardened, and we don't blush as frequently as we should. Again, someone said, Satan holds back adultery for later, but now he urges us to try the obscenity, the foolish talk, the coarse joking, or just talking about it. Because the more we talk about it, the more likely it's going to happen in the future. Here's what we need to do. What we need to do is just live in a better way. We have the words of life. And I love it when all the disciples were leaving and Jesus says, hey, guy, you going to leave me too? And he says, where are we going to go? You have the words of life. And this is one of the things I love about the Bible is that this is the life. For those who know this and practice it and apply it to their daily lives, every day is a good day. And you've heard me say that, and I'm about out of time, but you know, when we tell people to have a good day, usually what we're saying is not at all a biblical concept. When we say to people, I hope you have a good day, we're saying, I hope that everything goes well, that you have no stress, tension, problems in your life. But that ain't going to work because we live in a broken world. Rather, when we say we're hoping you have a good day, we should say we hope and pray that with God's enabling power, you're able to get through the day in a God-pleasing, God-honoring way for your good and His glory. That would be a good day. Not that we just are able to sit around, sleep in all day, watch TV, drink lemonade or whatever, and just lay in the hammock in the afternoon. That is not a good day. Because again, remember, life is not destination. Life is but preparation. Interesting verse here in verse 14. Therefore he says, awake, you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. Who in the world is he talking about? I got my idea. First of all, what is he quoting from? And you're not going to find one particular verse where all that is quoted from, but it's coming out of Isaiah primarily. And basically you have two ideas here. One is that, as you can see on the screen, it is believers who have committed darkness. They've kind of backslidden, and now he's telling them to awake from those deeds that you did while you were dead. Come awake, and God's again mercy will shine upon you. Or the other option would be that you're talking about the unsaved and the unbelievers who again will be born again, will wake up, and they will rise from the dead, as Ephesians 2, 1 through 4 states, and God will approve them, give them the light. And I guess just for me personally, I'm leaning towards the latter about being unbeliever because of the pronouns. And again, the pronouns references to unbelievers there in the context. So how do we navigate these waters? How do we navigate these waters? Notice what D.L. Moody says. And he uses the analogy of a ship. We are the ship, and our culture, your workplace, your neighborhood, your school is the water, the ocean. Okay? And we're to be in the world, but the world's not supposed to be in us. Because if you open the petcock, or if you poke a hole in the boat, what's going to happen? Or even on a stormy day, those of us who went to Canada many, many years ago, and we were on in Lake Algonquin, and we're trying to canoe across this big old lake with whitecaps, and the water's going in, we had one person in the canoe bailing, because the water line kind of got higher up on the gunwales as we were going down. So he says there, so she goes to the bottom, so Christians may live in the world, but if the world gets in them, they sink. They sink. So here's my thoughts to you as we kind of close this up today. As an individual, are you walking as a child of light? What of your past are you dragging in with you? Now, you're trying to sanitize it. You're trying to sanctify it. But you know it's wrong. It belongs in the past. That's what we used to do. It's like that song goes, you know, the things I used to do, I don't do them anymore. There's been a great change since I've been born again. So what of that past? And again, I'm not so much just talking about the physical, tangible sins, you know, this, da, 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 da. What about those attitudes? I used to be a very angry man. I would blow up. I mean, kids would run, things would fly. When I lost it, I lost it. And I used to do that when I was saved. But now that I'm being controlled by the Holy Spirit, as Ephesians 5:18 says, am I being controlled by the Holy Spirit? Am I still flying off the handle? That envy, that jealousy, that need to be right, that perfectionism, that I used to do that when I was unsaved. But now that I'm a believer, am I tolerant of others? Does it just frustrate me? I mean, poor Jackie. I think she might get stretched with my singing ability. What's the difference between a quarter note and a 16 note? They all look about the same. I mean, they're pretty close, right, Jackie? But she's a very forgiving, forbearing individual, putting up with me, saying, listen to me. Wait, I'll come in. Follow me. Forget that. I'll just sing it. I just like it. Just sing. Doesn't matter the pattern. Doesn't matter the notes. But forgiving. I used to be a perfectionist. Not that Jackie was. But now, you see where I'm going? So we have to ask ourselves, what from the past is coming into the present? We're going to talk in growth groups here. Let me just give you a little preview. How do we protect ourselves from the sexual blitz in this culture around us? We'll be talking about that here in the next hour. How does materialism and greed of the world affect you? And for me, clothing, no big deal. Watches, jewelry, no big deal. Even technology, no big deal. Horsepower, right to the heart it goes. So how does that affect you? Okay, now you know. So now how are you going to prevent? How are you going to guard against that? How are you going to push back from that? The power, materialism. All the messages that we see all day long in the media and just in our conversations, the messages of the darkness all around us, how do you fight against that? And we will talk about that here in just a few minutes. So my brothers and sisters, live as children of light. Live as children of light. As we say there in our mission statement, it'll be for your good and it'll be for God's glory. And that's why we should do it. If you're struggling in some area, you can say, you know, Pastor, that habit, I just can't break it. That emotion, I can't, those attitudes, those thoughts, I've just been struggling. I just can't get the victory. Talk to me. Talk to Ken. Talk to one of us here in the church. We got some godly men and women, and we'd love to sit down and help you get the victory of cutting the ties with the past. As Paul says, setting those things which are behind me, I set them aside, I put them off, I now press forward. All right.